listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. They are officially stupid. I don't know. The Republican National Congressional Committee, okay, the RNCC. This is the group, you know, it's part of the RNC or affiliated with the RNC, and they raise money for and do things for Republican members of the House of Representatives. They don't understand money. Now, if I were to say this about the Senate, it wouldn't be quite so important. If I was to say this about the President of the United States, it frankly wouldn't be quite so important. If I was to say this about the Democrats in the Senate right now, or in the House rather, because they're not in power, it wouldn't be quite so important. If I were to say this about NPR, CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, all the rest of them, well, it would be sort of important because they influence public opinion. But we're talking about the Republicans in the House of Representatives don't understand money. Now, why is that a big deal? And how do I know that they don't understand money? First of all, it's a big deal because the Constitution. In fact, I'll find the exact place in it. It's Article 1, Section 8. The Constitution gives only one part of only one branch of government the power to initiate the process of taxing, spending, or borrowing. Well, really taxing and spending. I mean, everything else obviously flows out of that. You either pay bills or you borrow to pay bills. But Article 1, Section 8, Sentence 1. The Congress shall have the power to collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. And by Congress, they mean the House of Representatives here. It's not the Senate. It has to start in the Congress, in the House of Representatives. Shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. And then it goes on to things like regulate commerce with foreign nations, et cetera. Okay, so it has to originate in the House of Representatives. And, well, you know, arguably Congress is the House and the Senate in this case. But the point, we'd have to hop back a little bit. Here it is. Section 7. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. But the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. In other words, it has to start in the House of Representatives. That's the first sentence of Article 7. Then Article 8 says, and then they get to spend the money. So you got it and I got it, right? We understand this, that all spending in the United States comes out of the House of Representatives. Period, full stop. The White House does not have the authority to spend a penny that hasn't been authorized by the House of Representatives. It's sort of like, I'll give you an example out of my own life. Louise and I, Louise and I have owned businesses for years and years and years, and sometimes I've run the businesses and sometimes she's run the businesses. And one of the things that I've learned over the years is that when it comes to detail stuff like bookkeeping, I am really bad at it and she's really good at it. And when it comes to things like writing books, she's a really good editor, but I'm a pretty good writer. Or doing talk radio, she doesn't, you know, even want to be on the radio. And same with her TV show, she doesn't like being on camera. And I'm okay with it. In fact, I think I do a fairly decent job of it. So we've divided up labor in our household. It's one of the reasons I think we've been married all these years. And you know, it continues. So she has final say on money things. She authorizes spending. Right? It's like, gee, let's buy, fill in the blank. Let's buy a new lamp. Well, I want the $600 lamp. And she's like, no, it's going to be a $200 lamp, or it's going to be a $20 lamp. I have a credit card, though. that she pays. So in theory, I could go out and buy the $600 lamp and she'd have to pay the bill, right? But that's not our agreement. And this is kind of the way it is between Congress and the executive branch. The White House runs the Treasury, which writes the checks. But the money comes from Congress because Congress raises that money in taxes. And the authorization for the payment comes from Congress because Congress has to authorize all the expenditures. You got this? So the president literally does not have the power to spend money. All he can do is pay the checks for Congress that has already spent the money. So when George Bush declares two wars and literally put them on the national credit card, no system in that legislation to pay for them. When George W. Bush dropped tax rates that you know, raised our debt by over probably, if you were to extend it out over a 20-year period, it would have been over $4 trillion. As it was well over $1 trillion. When George Bush cut tax rates, particularly on rich people, no mechanism to compensate for that. So the revenue went down. The expenses went up with the two wars. Medicare Part D, the expenses went up another $600 billion, almost $1 trillion. Who has to write the check? The Treasury, which works for the, you know, there, we have three branches of government. Remember, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. The legislative branch authorizes the taxes and the spending. The executive branch coins the money and pays the checks, but they don't do spending. So here comes this ad from the National Republican Congressional Committee that says it's got a picture of a you know, ocean liner that is sinking in the water with this giant platinum coin on the back of it with a picture of Obama on it. And it says liberals want Obama to mint a $1 trillion platinum coin to pay for his spending. The amount of platinum needed to mint a coin worth $1 trillion would sink the Titanic. Now, just consider for a minute the reality of this. Here you have the guys who are, and I say guys advisedly, usually I use that term in the gender neutral context, but it's mostly men who are Republicans in the House of Representatives. Here you have the guys who are actually responsible for the spending. The Republican National Congressional Committee, which is the House of Representatives, is the Republican National Senate Committee as well. They're the ones who are actually responsible for the spending and the only ones in the entire government who can spend money. And they're running an advertisement saying to all of us that they are idiots, that they don't understand how government works. The government that fewer than 50%, but still a lot of Americans voted to put them into place. Liberals want Obama to mint a $1 trillion platinum coin to pay for his spending. No, sorry. It's to pay for your spending, to pay for the spending of the House of Representatives. It's the only body. Read the Constitution. This is not rocket science. It's the only body that can legally spend money. Now, two things amaze me about this. One, that the Republicans would actually run an ad pointing out that they are idiots and they don't understand how their own branch of government works, that the Republicans in the House of Representatives would do that. The second is that every news media in every news channel in America is not, at the moment that we're speaking, falling down laughing hysterically. I mean, why is it that ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, why are they not interviewing Republicans saying, what did you miss in fourth grade civics? I don't get it. Why has nobody asked a Republican member of Congress that question?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Speaking of Congress, Alex Jones is coming up. He wants to impeach Senator Dianne Feinstein. Really? Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Is Alex available?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hey, Alex Jones. How are you?
I'm not doing too good. I mean, you just talked about how Congress does the spending bills. That's true. Well, then why are they saying NATO is now over our military? And why is Obama his minion Biden saying he's going to sign executive orders. I mean, I'm sick of people saying they weren't going to try to confiscate our guns when Dianne Feinstein says, Mr. and Mrs. America,
get ready to hand them in. Alex, great stuff. And
great stuff. This is about authoritarianism.
Let me just finish introducing you, okay?
I wish Obama Alex's would cry website for drone is, deaths.
Alex's website is Infowars.com. You've been on our show a number of times over the years. In fact, we did a show for an hour together on tax day a couple of years ago, which
I thought
was
where Obama got in. You could see all the tyranny then. Once Obama got in, you couldn't see it anymore.
Absolutely. Two things I want to talk to you about, and I'll just lay them out just real quick, and then, you know, you can decide how you want to handle it and go off.
Okay,
on
go
it.
Ahead.
Number one, Rush Limbaugh has this conspiracy theory that CNN put you on TV with Piers Morgan because they wanted everybody to think everybody in America to think that people who are pro-Second Amendment or in favor or opposed to gun control or in favor of gun ownership are crazy. And secondly, I understand that you're calling for Dianne Feinstein to be prosecuted for treason. So those are my two questions. I'm curious your take on those two things.
Well, number one, the old mainline conservative establishment media is a dying dinosaur, so they're going to attack me regardless of what I do, because I'm a libertarian constitutionalist. I'm not what they call a conservative like Mitt Romney, bought and paid for by the very same banks like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and others. I'm cutting past that whole paradigm and exposing that, yeah, you can have arguments for guns on both sides, okay? Let's be honest about that.
Sure.
The issue is we have an authoritarian world government. Oh, I thought I was a kook 10 years ago talking about that, or 17. Now being announced, they're imploding Europe. They are bringing in austerity, and the design is to reduce us to absolute despotism. And the globalists
Us to absolute serfdom. And Alex, I don't disagree. I've been saying the same thing for years and years. From my point of view, it is the transnational corporations and the billionaires who are running this show. You go off on politicians. To me, the politicians are simply the toadies of these people.
No, I agree. They're like waiters or order takers. So here's what I'm saying. Are there crazy people? Yes, they use knives, they use cars, they use guns. It's terrible. It's a tragedy. But statistically, overall crime, violent crime is down over 20% the last 15 years. New FBI crime statistics are out. They show an over 10%.
Well, that's what happens when economies go in the crapper. Pardon my language.
Well, violent crime is down because there are more guns on the streets.
Violent crime is down.
Okay. Yes.
Are you familiar with the lead theory?
Listen, I'm not familiar with
that. Okay, I'll just give it to you in just a second.
Are you saying FBI numbers are wrong?
No, I'm saying the FBI numbers are absolutely right. There's a really interesting article about this National Academy of Sciences, I believe, or AAAS publication, where they tracked the presence of lead in the blood of children and people in general. And what they found is that when we took the lead out of gasoline,
people got less violent.
About 25 years ago, as a consequence of that, people became less violent. Absolutely.
No, you're right. People in the 60s and 70s, because of leaded gas, yeah, I have seen those studies. I saw them years ago. No, you're right. Made them absolutely violent, mad as a hatter, is the saying.
The hatters were from mercury, but it's the same thing. I mean,
Yeah. You're right, mercury and other things. But the point is that, yes, I'll be honest, that adds to it. Look, here's the deal. They're up there waving the bloody shirt over and over again saying, look at these families, look at these kids. Meanwhile, they don't talk about thousands of drone deaths of innocent people, over 200 dead children killed by drones since Obama got in because he has a peace prize. It's cute. I mean, Alan Dershowitz.
We agree. This is an abomination. Do you seriously think that we should have guns to be able to fight off our government and that the founders had that in mind?
We don't have a government anymore. It's been taken over by foreign banks. They own both parties.
So do you think that we need guns to take them on?
Hey, Tom, the government has bought 1.6 billion bullets in the last 14 months. There are pieces of legislation, and I have the new Army training manual.
So do we need guns to take them on?
Brother, the new Army has a balance of power. That's why they have an armed guard at a bank. It's not because the armed guard is going to go out and shoot
somebody.
Actually,
most banks don't have armed guards anymore, Alex.
Well, they did in the past. Now, let me expand on this, and they should. Let me expand on this. Let me just make a point here for people.
Sure.
It's a balance of power. Mao Zedong said political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. He is the admitted greatest mass murderer in history. Well, He was the only guy with the guns.
Gandhi was a, if you look at the history of revolution, you will find a lot of examples of revolution against foreign forces.
There are a lot of
Vietnamese throwing us out, for example.
I agree.
Indigenous revolutions, find an indigenous revolution, in other words, where people overthrew their own government with guns, that was more successful than people overthrowing their own government.
1776.
That wasn't our own government. That was the British government.
No. Ceausescu, Romania.
That was the Soviets that were being. Ceausescu was a toady of the Soviets.
Do you know why? Do you know why in Poland the Soviets in 87 really had to start pulling out? Because people were quietly beating their brains out with hammers. People read Alexander.
Walesa led a nonviolent movement. He quoted Martin Luther King.
The media covered that. Let me tell you, they read Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, Oh, How We Burned in the Camps, and there was quietly a lot of the enforcers of the states.
And Solzhenitsyn was calling for nonviolent revolution also. He was calling for Martin Luther King, Jesus, Mahatma Gandhi. Let's do it that way.
That way
is the most effective way.
Let's get one thing straight. There was both there. Gandhi has quotes in his autobiography talking about if they're mowing you down, though, you need something like the American Second Amendment to protect yourself. It's one.
Oh, come on, Alex. Gandhi took that so far that he called up Franklin or what's his name in England.
Hey, here's the deal.
Cut a deal with Hitler.
Here's the deal. I'm not.
He told
calling.
Churchill
when
not
I called
to fight
for 1776.
Back.
I had Ron Paul on today, and he agreed there will be a revolution if they try to take
with
the guns. Look,
a violent revolution.
Listen, we're not going. Listen, I have the bills. I have the new army manual.
I think shooting at people
FEMA
is
camps.
More gutless
the
than,
FEMA
than what
camps
Martin
are real.
King did.
The FEMA camps are real. They're now admitted. I was right again.
Okay. Alex Jones, you can read it all at InfoWars.com. Thank you, Alex.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past the hour. We never did get Dianne Feinstein. Oh, well. Next time. We'll be right back. Occupying the media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and the Drudge Report and all the right-wing sites are all hysterical. The president might use an executive order to take away our guns. First of all, nobody is proposing taking away anybody's guns. This is just as crazy as the Republicans saying that the Obama wants to mint a $1 trillion coin to pay for his spending rather than their spending. All right. Lifting the debt limit allows the Treasury Department to pay for spending that has already been spent by the House of Representatives. But same thing with guns control. Dianne Feinstein is suggesting, hey, you know, back during Prohibition, when alcohol was illegal, there was a big market for alcohol. So guess what? A black market emerged. Along with black markets, you typically get crooks, the John Dillingers of the world and whatnot. And although I think he was more into robbing banks, well, he was into bootlegging too. And so, what do? They shoot people up. So, and they were using the state of the art at the time, which was the Tommy gun, the old Thompson. I've actually fired one. They're old, but in any case. So Congress banned them. And you don't see them anymore. I mean, machine guns have been illegal for 70 years. You don't see them anymore. So all Feinstein is saying is, henceforth, now and forevermore, let's ban weapons of war, assault weapons. Really simple. We're not going to go out and to people who already have them and take them away. Nobody's going to come to your house. I mean, I think it would be a good idea if everybody who had a gun had to register it, but they're not even going that far. Rick in Cedar City, Utah. Hey, Rick, says you disagree with me about the Second Amendment. What is this?
Well, what I wanted to say is actually Alex Jones hit it right on the head. I absolutely agree with him.
And that last about what?
Talked about the Second Amendment. Go ahead.
About what?
Well, about our Second Amendment rights and keeping it in the flintlock era, I think is absolutely the most ridiculous thing that I ever heard. You can't pick and choose your constitutional rights. I hear you talk about the Constitution all the time, and you can't say, okay, well, this is a legitimate constitutional right, but this one is not. That just makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I don't think that, you know, you got 100, 500, 1,000 crazies out there that do something heinous that has any right to take three 320 million people's rights away here in America. That just doesn't make no sense.
So are you agreeing with Alex's premise, although he never actually said it out loud, that the purpose of the Second Amendment was so that you and I could whip out a gun and start shooting federal agents if we don't like the way the government's going?
Absolutely.
I would have to say you're absolutely wrong. Not only is that a crazy idea, but it was not the idea of the founders. I strongly encourage you to go back and read the transcripts of Congress from the first Congress of the United States, 1789, when the Second Amendment was debated and basically created. And the debate was not about, you know, whether we should have or ban guns. The debate was whether we should have or ban a standing army. And the question was, how do we best defend the United States of America? And there were some people who said, well, we should have an army all the time to defend America. But the majority of the people who wrote the Constitution and who wrote the Second Amendment said, no, an army is not the best way to defend America. A citizen's militia is the best way. It must be well regulated. It should have local control. It's what we call the National Guard these days. That citizens' militia is the best way to do it. And if they're going to be in the militia, they have to know how to handle a weapon. And that's what the Second Amendment was all about. It wasn't to take down the government. Look at the Whiskey Rebellion in 1789. You had 13,000 guys in Pennsylvania who said George Washington imposed a tax on whiskey in order to raise money to pay for the federal government. And they said, we think this is unconstitutional, and we're not going to pay this damn tax. It was a tax revolt. It was a rebellion.
George Washington gathered together
the militias of three or four different states and rode as the leader, president of the United States, led the militia charge into Pennsylvania and put down the Whiskey Rebellion. Because they were trying to shoot at the U.S. government. Your turn, sir.
I agree with what you said because I have read that, and you're absolutely right. But that's the whole point, and that's the reason why that we came to this country is just
who's we?
That is freedom of speech. We didn't.
No, if you're talking about Jamestown, the first U.S. colony, if you're talking about white Europeans. Jamestown, the first colony, was a trading outpost for the British East India Company. So that we came to the United States to make money for a big transnational corporation. The second migration was, Plymouth Rock, the Pilgrims, and that we came to the United States because in England, the Pilgrims had banned drinking, had banned singing, had banned dancing, and they wanted to burn witches. And the British wouldn't let them do that anymore. And so they said, okay, that's it. We're leaving England. We're going to go to the United States. And they set up shop in Massachusetts. Read the history of Massachusetts.
That had nothing to do with free speech. And the manipulation of currency. You got to take that into consideration, too. That was the whole point of why
we didn't have our own currency, so it couldn't be manipulated. I'm guessing what you're thinking of was the Tea Act, which provoked the Boston Tea Party, and that was a tax cut by the British Parliament, a tax cut to almost zero on British tea imported into the United States by the British East India Company, so that the East India Company could compete with the small entrepreneurial smugglers, was what the British called them. The small tea shops and the small tea vendors, they wanted to Walmartize America, and the colonists said no. The Boston Tea Party and the subsequent American Revolution were a revolt against corporate power. It had nothing to do with free speech either. I mean, free speech was something that they wrote into the Constitution, but we never fought a war over free speech. We fought a war with England over the right to economic self-determination. Hello?
So what's your whole point is you disagree with the Second Amendment right? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that I absolutely agree that in order to maintain the safety of a free state a well-regulated militia is the best way to go. It's better than having a standing army, because standing armies have a tendency to corrupt government and, in many cases, overthrow government over time. And therefore, I agree with the founders who said that in the Constitution, you cannot appropriate money for an army for a period of time longer than 2 years.
Right, exactly. But what you're saying is then we don't have the right to protect ourselves.
According to the Constitution and according to the founders, we don't have the right to violently overthrow our own government. We are our own government. That's the whole, that's the brilliant concept of American exceptionalism.
Well, see, in theory, that's correct, but that's not the way that it is. You and I both know that you're right, the Federal Reserve, the globalist elitists that actually control this.
Well, yeah, I'd say the Federal Reserve are part of dancing to the tune, too. If you want a little more specific villain, I'd say transnational corporations, the billionaire class,
right,
and
exactly.
The international bankers, the international central bankers. But if you put all those together, Rick, do you really think that you're going to successfully overthrow them with your AR-15?
Well, see, and that's the whole thing. It's not really defending against our own government, because I think our own government is the greatest nation on earth, obviously. But it's those, like you said, the transnational corporations is who we have to protect ourselves.
So what's the best way to do that?
Foreign or domestic, we will do that.
Well, if you really think that you're going to get, Walmart to get out of your neighborhood and bring back that 120 local companies that used to exist before Walmart put them out, or your local savings banks that used to exist before Citicorp came in, or Wells Fargo or whatever, if you really think you're going to do that by walking into one of these stores with a semi-automatic gun, I'd say you're in deep trouble, Rick.
Well, yeah, it's impossible. You can't.
Why do you need an assault weapon?
Well, because it's my constitutional right. That's what I do. I mean,
why do you need it?
I take my family out and I go shooting with them. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I even heard here on your show, I don't know, a month or so ago, 2 months ago or so, that you went out and went shooting with your family.
I have done that. I have absolutely done that with AR-15s and with Uzis and my kids, but it was on a shooting range. And we rented those weapons. I don't feel any need to own, and I was curious, and in part it was because I was writing a novel that involved guns, and I had to learn enough about guns to be able to write about them intelligently. But, nonetheless, I'll be the first to admit, it was a lot of fun. Toys for boys, long things that go when stuff comes out the end of them, we all have testosterone here, at least half of us do. But that said, why do you need to have one, and why should we as a society say that the danger and damage done to society is worth, letting people have these things? I don't, particularly when they're not going to use them to overthrow the government, because that's not going to work, and it wasn't the founder's idea, and it's a dumb idea, and you're not going to use them to overthrow transnational corporations or anybody else. Rick, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour, as Thomas Jefferson, so brilliantly said, the number one engine of oppression is a standing army. The immediate support group for We the People. I suppose it's an easy talking point. Oh, yeah, we got to make the government afraid of us. The government should be afraid of the people, not the other way around. Well, yeah, but not afraid of their guns. The government should be afraid of the people's politics, that the people will vote them out of office, that the people will join political parties and political movements, that the people will be in the streets like they were in Selma, Alabama. I'll tell you that the politicians in Selma, Alabama in the 60s were a hell of a lot more terrified than was George Washington when the Whiskey Rebellion happened. Because those people were nonviolent. Nonviolence is the most powerful political force there is. And the most powerful revolutionary force. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good. You wanted to talk about guns and Republicans.
Yeah. I think that Dianne Feinstein is not a traitor. She's a hero. And instead of impeaching her, what we should do is charge the Republicans, who are just stooges of the NRA, charge them with being accessories to murder. Because, you know, they go along with, you know, the gun industry makes millions of dollars in blood money by selling these assault rifles. And at the same time, the Republicans scare the public. Oh, Obama's going to come for your guns.
Yeah.
You know, and
here's the thing that boggles my mind, Paul. You know how the tobacco industry got taken down? It was by a bunch of lawyers. Again, you know, it wasn't people with guns who looked around and said, a 500,000 Americans every year die from tobacco. And that's the actual number. 500,000 Americans die from tobacco. And it wasn't that Americans looked around and said, holy cow, it's a 9/11 about every 8 or 10 hours that is happening in this country. And therefore, we've got to get out there with our guns and start shooting up the tobacco companies. No, that's not how it went down. How it went down was a bunch of lawyers. Mike Papantonio was one of them. A bunch of lawyers went into court and said, we are going to hold these companies responsible for the diseases and the deaths that they cause. And it took several years. It took several decades, actually. But eventually they won. And the tobacco companies had to pay out billions of dollars to the people that they harmed. They had to put warnings on their packages. They had to stop advertising to children. They, you know, they had to fundamentally change their business model, and they are on the way out. Smoking has gone from over 50% in America to under 25%. Smoking has gone from being the thing that sophisticated people like Cary Grant used to do to being the thing that you typically associate with trailer trash. That's what has happened. That was the consequence of taking on an industry with the law. But the firearms industry, the Republicans, if you really want to go after the Republicans pushed through legislation about a decade and a half ago, maybe a little farther back. It was during one of the Republican administrations, as I recall. I'd have to go back and look. That said that you and I and our lawyers no longer have the right to sue gun manufacturers or gun sellers for anything, for any liability that's associated with their product. Because I believe if that law was undone, if the gun manufacturers had to defend themselves in court or the gun sellers had to defend themselves in court, they would lose. They would lose big. They would lose a lot of money. Right now, the families of those children in Newtown, Connecticut, they do not have the right to sue the guy who sold that weapon to that woman. And they do not have the right to sue the company that made the weapon. They don't have the right to sue the company that made the bullets. Yet all of those things were made and sold with one single purpose in mind, and that's to kill human beings. They should have the right to sue. And if they had the right to sue, I guarantee you it would radically diminish the availability of weapons in the United States. That's the thing that we need to change, is this exemption from liability that only one industry has. I mean, you can still sue the oil industry. You can sue you can sue any industry in America. That's why you have these warning labels on car seats, you know, on children's car seats. Do, you know, use this particular. Why? Because they don't want to get sued. They want to make sure you use it right. No warning labels on your gun. No automatic lock, trigger locks on your gun. Why? Because they don't give a rat's patootie because they have no liability. That's what I would go after. Paul, thank you for the call. Rose in Oregonia, Ohio. Hey, Rose, thanks for listening to XM Radio. What's up?
Hi. Well, I'm right off front. I'm going to tell you, I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. Okay, so I have guns and whatever. But my main reason.
I know a lot of Democrats who have guns and a lot of liberals who have guns. What? I don't understand why you have to have guns to be a Republican or a conservative, or why a conservative Republican would have to have guns.
Well, it doesn't matter. My reason for calling is that the whole gun issue is really beside the point. The real point is there's a mental health issue. Every single one of the people that have committed these crimes, they have mental health issues, and their families know it. Their doctors know it. Schools know it. So why don't somebody look into things like that to try to fix a problem? Because there's really no sane person out there shooting up anyone.
Well, on the day that a nameless young man murdered 20 children and 8 adults in Newtown, Connecticut. On that very same afternoon in China, a mentally ill person, a crazy guy, went into a school with a knife and successfully attacked 32 children and slashed them. went after, he was trying to kill him. You know how many he killed?
And that's my point.
Do you know how many he killed?
It doesn't matter whether it's a gun or a knife.
Rose, do you know how many he killed?
Probably way more than Newtown.
He killed zero.
With a knife or
that's
whatever.
That's right.
You know what?
Because all he had was a knife.
Even if the guy couldn't have gotten a hold of a gun, which I still don't understand why his mother had him, but even if
she had him because she was because she thought that the end of the world was coming, she was storing food, she was doing the whole Glenn Beck.
Yeah, she wasn't exactly right either. But if he would have found other ways to harm people, he could have blown up that school. You know, there's way other ways to do these things. It's just a real mental health issue.
Rose, then you think that we should go back to the way mental health was treated before the Reagan administration and make mental health of treatment available to people who are mentally ill? Because Ronald Reagan closed the mental hospitals across the country and threw the people out into the streets, which is why all of a sudden we had this homeless situation in America after the Reagan administration. So you're blaming this on Ronald Reagan.
No, I'm not.
Well, if you're saying it's a mental health issue, you've got to be blaming it on Ronald Reagan. He was the one who ended free mental health in the United States, or mental health treatment.
I'm not going to blame it on any politician. This is a family matter.
Okay. Rose, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with me, or with you. And with me is Brian Dunning. I don't see him on the board. He's on Skype. Okay. Brian is the science writer and host and producer of Skeptoid. Skeptoid.com. The Skeptoid.com is the website. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Skeptoid is right.
And thank you for joining us. Concord, Massachusetts has said that single-serving polyethylene terephthalate plastic bottles are banned. Now, phthalates are a category of chemicals that have come under increasing scrutiny recently because they seem to act like estrogen, estrogen mimickers. This is, you know, a lot of people are concerned that they're responsible for the explosion in estrogen-based cancers, principally breast, ovarian, uterine, and testicular and prostate. But in addition to that, we use, you know, millions and millions, well, 18 million barrels of oil a year to make all these plastic water bottles, just the plastic water bottles. Coke, on the other hand, has come out with a corn-based plastic that they use for their Dasani water bottles that is not phthalates. I don't understand your objection to a city, a community, saying we don't want, you know, poisonous and environmentally destructive substances being sold in our community when there are healthy alternatives.
You know, I'm not sure it's exactly an objection. It's more a case of looking at what the real science says and whether decisions should be based on sound science or whether they should be based on public decision. If people in that community have voted that they don't want single-serving plastic water bottles, great, more power to them. Ban them. It just depends on why they've decided to make that decision, and if it was intended to be based on sound science, then was it actually?
Well, I don't think anybody's disputing that our landfills are filling up, that there's a giant circle of plastic out in the Pacific Ocean that's the size of some small continents. It's that is killing off marine life. That these plastics, these phthalate-based plastics, last in the food chain for generations, if not centuries. That the stuff is bad stuff. I mean, you know,
you're bringing up a lot of different subjects there, and we can tackle all of those one by one if you want to.
I thought that you were saying that, well, what's the basis of your argument that Concord, Massachusetts should not be banning single-serving plastic water bottles?
Okay, the things that I have a problem with are when people invent bad science to frighten other people into adopting their personal ideology. I'm not sure that was the case that happened here. There certainly are valid reasons why we shouldn't be using plastic water bottles. You can think of many off the top of your head. It's ridiculously expensive, first of all. If you just fill up your own reusable container from your tap, you're getting probably better water for free, essentially.
Yeah.
That, in my mind, is the best reason to. If the ban was initiated because people thought that using the bottles was unhealthy because it imparts some sort of toxins to the person drinking from them, that's completely false. That's what.
Well, I don't know that that was the case. I have no insight into the minds, the thought process, or the arguments that were made in Concord, Massachusetts, leading up to this. Other than one of the city council people said they are draining our aquifers and selling our own water back to us.
I did see that comment, and that didn't make much sense to me because that's where the tap water comes from, also.
Sure.
So, what.
Well, that's the whole point. It's like,
from the
what she's pointing out is that it's a scam. You know, you can have your tap water for, a penny a gallon if you take it out of the tap, or you can have it for a dollar for 8 ounces if you buy it in the store.
And that's an absolutely valid argument. You know, we keep bottles of water in the back of our cars, for example, just in case you're somewhere and you get thirsty. That's a reason to have a plastic water bottle. However, here at my desk, I'm drinking from a refillable bottle that I just refill from the bathroom tap all day long.
Right. I do the same thing with a cup. With a good old-fashioned ceramic cup. I don't even have to worry about plastics. I mean,
and another one of their arguments was that they're filling up the landfills. That's true of anything that gets thrown away, obviously, and not been recycled. Whether switching to bioplastics, as you mentioned, Pepsi has done.
Coke. Dasani.
That doesn't necessarily address that problem. Bioplastics are not automatically more biodegradable than petroleum-based plastics. First of all, you have to understand that
they degrade in less than a decade rather than less than a century.
But so can petroleum-based products, because there are certain additives we can add to them. Products that are likely to be put into landfills are often given additives to make them more biodegradable. And you have to understand that there are as many different kinds of plastic as there are applications for plastic, literally thousands of kinds. And we have so far hundreds of kinds of bioplastics. And all of these have different characteristics. It's not necessarily a fact that any one given bioplastic is going to degrade faster than a petroleum-based plastic.
So I guess maybe we don't have a disagreement here, because my understanding was that you were of the opinion that this community, Concord, Massachusetts, should not have the power to ban these bottles, that this was government meddling in the economy, and it should be simply, the decisions of free people in a free market.
Well, I think it's kind of a silly decision. There's no doubt about that. But if that's what the voters wanted, that's what the voters want.
Yeah.
If it was something that was not voted into place by the community, then we certainly have something to talk about there.
Okay. So you're not opposed in principle to small D democracy, essentially, to the voters saying, yeah, we'd like to have Social Security. We'd like to have fewer plastic water bottles. We'd like to have whatever we think is a good thing, even if we're dumb about it.
You know, it depends on what voters can come up with. Who knows what voters can come up with? We have almost silly propositions here in California that pass every single year, and some of them are quite goofy. A lot of the times they're based on the promotion of bad science to frighten people into adopting someone's particular viewpoint.
Things like, for example, the bad science of economic science, the big food companies saying that if we had to relabel our foods to indicate whether or not they contain genetically modified organisms, your price of food is going to go up. Whereas there have been hundreds of changes in labeling requirements over the last 4 decades, and none of them have produced an increase in food prices.
Yeah, that was not a strong argument to have been made. That the basic case with that particular proposition was anti-GMO activists wanted to make it more difficult for people to sell GMO products.
Not true. They wanted it to make it easier for consumers to decide whether or not they wanted genetically modified organisms in their food.
Yeah, and so then they promoted some bad science in order to frighten people into saying, gee, GMOs are something we should worry about.
I don't recall that any of the advertising, we ran some of those ads on this program, that any of the ads that were put out about labeling genetically modified organisms vilified them. Instead, they simply said, we should be able to make the choice whether we have these things or not. In fact, I think that the pro-GMO labeling faction in California was being pretty rigorous about not taking a position on whether GMOs were bad or good, simply taking the position, you should have the right to know if this is in your food.
Yeah, that was simply, you know, clever spinning of the subject. And, you know,
how is it clever spinning? I'd like to know how much sodium's in my food, too. Is that clever spinning?
Well, that's something that has an actual health impact. That's worth knowing.
Well, and do you think GMOs don't?
That question is very clear, that there's no GMO products on the market that have any plausible dangers. That's a whole other subject.
You know, there are entire European countries that disagree with you.
And again, that's based on voter preference.
Then they have lots and lots of good science. Okay, all right. I think we've talked this one out. Brian Dunning, Skeptoid.com. Thanks, Brian.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. Want to ban plastic water bottles nationwide? What do you think? Works for me. Welcome back. Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Just don't tell Rush Limbaugh. He'll want some. Dominic in Argyle, New York. Hey, Dominic. Thanks for listening to Sirius Radio. What's up? Do you want to talk about plastic bottles? Dominic? No Dominic. He's not there. Okay. Robert in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hey, Robert. Thanks for listening to XM.
Hey, Tom. It's not what I was calling, but I could answer your question you just asked a minute ago.
Okay.
About who said about the gun grab. Now let me finish. Feinstein Bill does say gun grab, because what her bill is, it's a workaround. You know, she wants everybody to register, and history has shown, Red China, Soviet Russia, Germany in the 1930s, that registration, the next step is confiscation. Now, there's already confiscation drill being taken place. This is not why I called. I wanted to call to say I'm totally against the entire gun grab, gun ban thing going on. I'm wondering if China...
Well, hang on just a second here, Robert. All of this all of this hysteria about they're going to take away my guns, they being this oppressive government, has an assumption built into it. And that assumption is that the only way you can successfully change an oppressive government is with guns. Following my logic?
Well, this is why the Second Amendment is in place.
No, it's not why the Second Amendment was in place. The Second Amendment was in place so that the militia, well-regulated militia, in other words, the government itself, could protect itself from people who wanted to rebel against it. And the proof of that
is... The people
is
are the militia.
Mm-hmm. The militia is made up of the people, but when the people in 1798, I think it was, it couldn't have been 98, that was the Adams administration, it must have been 1789, the George Washington administration, when the people of Pennsylvania stood up and said, we're not going to pay taxes on our whiskey. And and if you come and try and collect those taxes, we're going to shoot you. George Washington rounded up the militia of a couple of states and rode in there and put down that rebellion. It's called the Whiskey Rebellion. I mean, look it up. George Washington was the first and arguably the only president to lead troops into battle. And he was leading those troops against Americans. And it was Americans who were in rebellion.
Well, he also stood up against the largest army at that time, the
British. But that was not an oppressive American government. The Second Amendment is not there to help protect us against an oppressive American government. It's there to help protect us against an oppressive foreign government.
Well, you can't honestly say, Tom, that there is things going on in the government that are hurting the people. A lot of rights being taken away, a lot of freedoms and liberties.
Don't disagree with any of that, Robert. How many of those, though, can you identify any one of those that you're going to successfully solve? Any of those civil rights problems or personal privacy problems? Let me finish my sentence. personal privacy problems that you're going to successfully solve by going down to the local office of, you know, the FBI where they're snooping on you, or the local police department that's watching you, or the or right. AT&T who's listening into your phone calls with an assault weapon.
Right.
You really think right. that's going to solve right. the problem?
Oh, no, but that's not the
problem. Okay, if that's not going to solve the problem, then why do you need the assault yeah. weapon?
Well, I mean, I, for one, I have one, a couple. You just never know in this day and age what's going on.
Well, give me a scenario, because I'm lacking one. I mean, you know, it's like David Koresh. Well, he thought if he just had enough assault weapons, he could hold off the government. That didn't work out all that well.
I guess the most popular, right, it doesn't work out that way because you're right. You can't go against the U.S. government with their thousands of rounds of bullets and tanks and jets. Yeah, true.
But the flip side of that, Robert, is we had a time in the United States where if your skin was dark, you could not go into certain restaurants. You could not go into certain parts of town. In fact, there were places where if you just walked around, people would murder you. And people of dark skin, African Americans, went into the heart of that, went into Selma, Alabama, and they said, "We have no guns. We have no weapons. Turn on the dogs, turn on the water cannons, beat us, shoot us, do your best." And they won that revolution. So tell me how guns are going to help us overcome a government when our own history shows that the times that we have most successfully transformed our government were when the Bonus Army occupied the White House from the White House down to the Potomac River in 1931 and said, "We are peaceful and nonviolent." And President Hoover brought General MacArthur in and rode on horseback through there and lit their camp on fire and shot a couple of people dead. And what happened? The American people were horrified, and they said, "Okay, Hoover's out. We're going to have a revolution that was called the New Deal."
Okay, well, Admiral Yamamoto in World War II, the main reason they did not invade U.S. because he said, because behind every blade of grass is an American with a gun. And also, that's one of the reasons, yes. Yeah, I'll let you finish.
The Japanese didn't invade us because they're a little tiny country and we're a great big country. And they're, you know, and they didn't even want our continent. They were PO'd because we cut off their oil through the Straits of Malacca. They were trying to sting us.
Well, okay, but he still said the reason we don't invade is because there's American behind every blade of grass.
You know, there were probably millions of Japanese who said stupid things during World War II, and you know, whether that particular general made that particular statement is still in dispute, but it doesn't matter. The Japanese, you know, the United States has never been successfully invaded and occupied. The British and Canadians tried it in 1812, didn't work out so well for them, and they got as far as the White House, which they caught on fire.
Well, I mean, look what happened to every country that has a gun ban. But look what happened to Germany. Look what happened to Russia. I mean, how many millions of civilians were killed when the government or whoever decided to march on them?
Germany, Hitler actually encouraged the ownership of guns. He did not ban the ownership of guns.
I know the facts.
It was, let me tell you the facts. If you go back and look at it, it was the government before Hitler, it was Bismarck, who tried to ban guns, as it were, and it wasn't even trying to ban guns. It was just, it was basically registering them. Hitler actually promoted the ownership of guns. He called it a manly sport. Adolf Hitler called shooting a manly sport. No, it was not about take away the guns. You're never going to succeed in overthrowing a government with guns. If you want to change a government, stand there like they did in Tahrir Square nonviolently.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
When are Americans going to understand that the nonviolence is the most powerful revolutionary force in the world? Fair and only slightly unbalanced, Tom Hartman here. Welcome back. Leo in Jackson, Mississippi, you disagree with me about the Founding Fathers and guns?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I agree with you.
Oh, okay.
But I think the bigger point is, first of all, in the beginning, as I think some of the founding fathers were atheists, and number two, I think that
they were deists.
The Constitution says that black people were 3/5 of a man.
No, it doesn't. It didn't say that. But the effect was that. But that's not what it, what it said was there was a huge debate about how the, you know, the number of members of the House of Representatives that a state gets is determined by its population. Okay. And Georgia had Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, the southern slave states had large populations of slaves relative to whites. In fact, in some cases, it was 10 to 1 African Americans to whites. And so the southern states said that all of the slaves that they had should be counted for the purposes of determining how many members of the House of Representatives they could have, so they could have more political influence in Washington, D.C. The northern states said, wait a minute, you want us to count these people who can't vote to give you more political power, more representation? And the southern states said, yes, that's what we want you to do. And the northern states said, we're not going to do that. And so the compromise that they came up with was that until the year 1808, when the importation of slaves would be abolished, and at the time that they were writing the Constitution, there was a general consensus that that would be the end of slavery in the United States. Up until the year 1808, you can read this in the Constitution, 3/5 of the non-voting people in the South, and arguably that included women as well, but that's a whole other argument. It is mostly black men, African-American men. 3/5 of them would be counted for the purposes of determining how many representatives a state would have in Congress. And 2/5 would not be counted. So that, but it had nothing to do with, you know, being a man or not a man. Because the African Americans in the South had no rights whatsoever. They were considered property. So it was 0, not 3/5. Pardon my interrupting you and going off on what is probably a tangent about what you wanted to talk about, but just for the record.
But the last point I'd like to make is, why is it that we think that people 250 years ago, it seems as if we think that their word is gospel in the 21st century. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree and disagree. And here's, I agree with you that the founders were not divinely inspired and that the Constitution is not the revealed word of God and that we shouldn't slavishly follow it. We shouldn't just, you know, whatever it says, oh, that's got to be, you know, because on the other hand, these guys had literally, many of them had spent much of their lives studying government and republics and constitutions and democracies and looking at how different governments formed, and they put an enormous amount of thought into the Constitution. And my fear is that if the Constitution gets opened up with a constitutional convention, as the conservatives are trying to have happen on July 4th of this year, if the Constitution gets opened up to tinker with, in this day and age when you've got transnational corporations and billionaires owning so many politicians, owning so many votes about what the new Constitution will say, that we will end up with a situation where corporate personhood, for example, gets enshrined in our Constitution or where our rights are actually diminished. So, you know, there's a lot wrong with our Constitution. We don't have proportional representation. We don't, you know, we have a two-party political system rather than a multi-party political system. I could give you a relatively decent, I think, short list, but I'm very, very worried about opening it up to tinker with. But your point that just because the founders said that we should have guns doesn't mean that we should have guns forever, I think is a good point. If that was the point you were making.
Well, yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah, okay. Leo, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Sean in Manhattan, Illinois. Hey, Sean. Says here you strongly disagree with me? About what?
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is, when a corporation owns 51% of the corporation, like China owns more than 51% of this country.
They don't. China owns in the neighborhood of $1 trillion of our debt. And almost irrelevant fragment of our country in terms of business and land.
Well, eventually they're going to want their money back, right? When you borrow somebody money, you want your money back.
Well, and we've already planned to pay it back. There are payment amortization schedules for the entire federal debt. If they've got a 20-year bond, the federal government has already determined at what point that bond will be paid back. It's not like they can come in and say, hey, I want that money. All they can do with those treasury bonds is sell them to other people who want to have a treasury bond. You buy a 10-year bond, it's a 10-year bond. I can sell it to you, but I can't go to the government and say, give me the money right now, because I'm only a year into it. I got to wait until the 10th year, and then the government cashes it in. And that is already budgeted. So nobody is going to come and say, I want my money back, and we're not going to be able to pay it. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, what about when the fresh water supply runs out, and then you're going to start getting people looking for fresh water, and things are going to start getting really crazy around here.
Well, it's already started to happen, and you've got some cities in the United States where
and your land.
Yeah, you've got some cities in the United States where they're actually recycling, you know, gray water. I mean, they're recycling wastewater.
Okay,
those are real concerns.
Now, you also said, let's get rid of all the plastic water bottles. How do we have a better recycling program for the plastic water bottles that we have? Why?
It's a great solution. That's a great solution. If people want to waste their money on plastic water bottles, let them recycle it. I don't disagree with you. You should have been there in the city council of Concord, Massachusetts, and put that forward. Sean, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. David in Berthold, California, listening to AM 760. Hey, David.
Hi, first-time caller. I really appreciate the discourse that you start up with all of these folks. And I am not a gun owner. I'm in my 60s. I never planned to be a gun owner, and here's why. I am not afraid. I'm not afraid. And I can go around this country feeling unafraid, particularly because I trust the government is taking care of me, either through the National Guard or through the police forces or a variety of federal and state institutions.
I agree.
I do not understand why all of the callers that are worried about the Second Amendment, they never talk about their need to protect themselves from wild animals or to get rid of vermin on their property or to protect themselves from an invading army.
Why don't they talk about protecting themselves from the real dangers? I mean, you know, one in three Americans is going to get cancer this year or in their lifetimes. Yes. It's like, you know, this is real stuff. Let's throw some money at cancer research. Over 100,000 people a year die from iatrogenic diseases, doctor-caused diseases. Let's be a little more sensible and if we can computerize the way that we gather intelligence on Americans, why can't we computerize our healthcare system?
I agree with you. But what I notice is that these people who are worried about their, quote, guns being taken away, the only thing they describe is their need to shoot other people.
Right.
That's all they're describing. They're not describing any other use for the gun than to shoot other people.
Well, that's what they're made for.
Well,
exactly. I mean, other than hunting rifles and target pistols and you can argue that shooting targets is a legitimate sport. I would argue that. And you can argue that hunting is, you know, it's part of the heritage of America and the people who eat meat. Frankly, I don't eat meat. I haven't eaten meat since I was 16 years old. But I have to say, if somebody wants to eat meat, I think that if the only way that they get that meat is to go down to the store and buy it wrapped in plastic, they're behaving like a coward. They should be willing to kill the thing that they want to eat.
Right.
And if everybody who wanted to eat meat had to kill what they were going to eat, I think the number of vegetarians in this country would radically go up. But all that said, you know, somebody wants to have a hunting rifle, God bless them.
You're talking to a vegetarian, so I'm with you on
appreciate
that.
The convert.
I do not believe that the Second Amendment gives me the right to shoot people.
Yeah.
I
agree. It gives you the right to be a member of a well-regulated militia. David, thank you for the call. Bill in Stockton, California. We've stacked all the disagree ones here at the top of the list. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi. A couple things I had issue with what you said. The first thing was you claimed that there are no legislators proposing confiscation. That's just simply not true. I mean, you go.
Who has?
Feinstein, 60 Minutes, 3 years ago. She said, or more than 3 years ago, it was the 94 ban. She said, I would go for confiscation of Mr. and Mr. America's guns if I could get the votes in Congress.
But she couldn't, and so she never proposed that legislation. There has never been a piece of legislation put forward. A piece of serious legislation put forward that would confiscate guns in the United States, to the best
of
my knowledge.
I mean,
correct me if I'm wrong. Give me the number of the House or Senate bill. Give me an HR or an SB number.
The Roberti Ruse Assault Weapons Act in California in 1994 said you either register them or you turn them in.
Okay.
And after you register them, you cannot sell them, you cannot will them to your children, you must turn them into the police.
Did it pass into law?
That's de facto confiscation.
Did it pass into law?
Current law in California had 90% noncompliance.
That is the current law in California?
That is current law in California.
That's very interesting. I have to believe, Bill, that you're mischaracterizing that. I don't think that a bill could stand that said exactly what you're saying. But, you know, I'll have to check it out. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the information. 45 minutes past the hour. You know, I'm willing to learn. If there have been federal laws proposed or passed that say we're going to confiscate guns. But this is the thing. The NRA is running around saying they're going to come and take your guns. And to the best of my knowledge... And to the best of my knowledge, nobody's saying take guns.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What they are saying is what General Stanley McChrystal said yesterday, which is weapons of war need not be and should not be in the hands of civilians. Okay, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on. By the way, you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of the goat and the person you helped at goatsfortheoldgoats.com, which is the underwriter for our Talk Radio News segment, talkradionews.com. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Well, the president is going to choose his chief of staff, Jack Lew, to be Treasury Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're expecting that announcement perhaps as early as tomorrow. Not sure when that's going to happen. You know, I think he's going to get that confirmed pretty easily.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Jack Lew seems to be a guy who's like a decent guy and a tough negotiator, and he might make actually a very good Treasury Secretary from everything I read.
Right. I mean, they're saying that his main job is going to be some kind of control over the debt in terms of how it's handled. How do they, over a period of time, negotiate the debt? Where do they take it from, et cetera?
Is Jack Lew willing to mint a trillion-dollar coin?
Well, that's your friends, the Republicans.
Hey, I'm in favor of it. Ellen Brown is the person who first came up with this idea about 2-3 years ago, and she talked about it on this program. And at the time, I thought, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And the more I read about it, the more it makes sense to me. It's like, you know, what's crazy is the idea of the debt ceiling, of saying Congress is going to incur expenses and require the Treasury Department to write the checks to pay those expenses, but then forbid the Treasury Department from having the money to pay those expenses.
Oh,
that's
exactly.
What's crazy.
I mean, that would like be going to the bank and saying, oh, here's your mortgage, but now you can't have your mortgage. Forget your house.
Right, right. Or saying, I just put $10,000 on my credit card, but my personal credit limit is $6,000, so I'm not going to pay the other $4,000.
Right, exactly. Well, that's what they may do, or they may just print money. But I don't think Jack Lew's the type that's just going to print money.
Yeah, well, we'll
I think
see.
That's a.
But see, they can't. The Fed can't involve itself in this. And the Fed, you know, I mean, they could print coin. I mean, the mint makes coins, so the coins in your pocket are actually U.S. currency. But the folding paper in your pocket is not the property of the U.S. government. It's
the
property of the Federal Reserve, and so the Federal Reserve can't get us out of this. But the mint can get us out of this by minting that trillion-dollar coin. But anyhow, it's...
And speaking of the Federal Reserve, your friend and my friend, Senator Sanders, today went after, I guess, Jamie Dimon from the Federal Reserve is going to be leaving.
But wait a minute, Jamie Dimon?
He is a Wall Street guy.
Yeah.
And today, Senator Sanders said that he's going to reintroduce legislation that would prohibit financial industry executives from serving on the Fed.
Oh, Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO of his Citibank, isn't it?
I believe
is
so.
Is also sitting on the New York Fed, which regulates Citibank. And there's something rotten in Denmark.
I mean, that is the
Denmark.
Fox watching the hen house.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Our good friend Senator Sanders is actually going to really try and prevent that. Let me just give you a lighthearted thing before we get into more news, and that is that on the inauguration day, Beyonce is going to be singing the national anthem, and James Taylor is going to be singing, I think, My Country 'Tis of Thee.
Wow. Now, and in fact, when you invited me to the inaugural ball 4 years ago at the Union Station, James Taylor was there.
That's playing. Right.
Yeah, and you know,
got
you,
it.
You,
you
know
now,
his, you know his
unfortunately,
family.
President Obama has eliminated most of the inaugural balls.
No, I didn't know that.
There's two official ones, and then there's a third sort of unofficial one that he's going to go to. Huh. Three inaugural balls, when usually they go to between 9 and 11. The only president that has gone to less in recent history was President Dwight Eisenhower.
Why do you think Obama did that?
I have no idea. And I mean, I just...
Do you think it's a statement of frugality?
I don't know whether it's because he... What, and one is a military ball. And I think what he's doing instead is he's having some of the high rollers to, quote-unquote, brunch at the White House on Thursday and Friday. Mm-hmm. There are several other balls, although the president is not going to them, and they're not inexpensive. For instance, the Creative Coalition is doing one at the Harmon Center, at the Sidney Harmon Center, for, I think, $10,000 a couple.
And the president's not even going to show up?
No.
Wow, and you and I hung out with the president and the vice president.
That's exactly
right. 4 years ago.
4 years ago, he went to like 9 or 11 inaugural balls.
Yeah.
And now he's going to 2 or 3.
It was a hoot having Barack Obama and Michelle Obama dancing about 25 feet from me. I mean, it was just an absolute
hoot.
And
we got to see them. The vice president came by. It's really quite, I can't figure out who's advising him on this issue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on the other hand, if he had 10 or 11 balls, and they added up the cost of that, and let's say it's $112 million, that would be the headline on Drudge that day.
Well,
it's going to be no matter what.
Of Drudge.
Yeah.
Because of the, I don't know if you've seen it in the last hour or so, but he went across the line today. He actually, Tom, has a picture where they're talking about gun control and the fact that the president may issue some executive orders, and I'm going to talk about that in just a quick minute here, but he has a picture of Stalin and Hitler.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. White House threatens executive orders on guns.
I mean, really?
Amazing.
One of the executive orders that they should do is apparently, Senator Blumenthal has just introduced or is about to introduce this legislation saying that when they do background checks, of which they should do for every gun, they should combine the AFT, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms data with the FBI data. Now, if AFT collects data, they're not allowed to share it with the FBI. Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. And you know, it's a sign of the power of the NRA. By the way, with regard to Hitler and Stalin, if you think back, Hitler came to power with the, you know, the beer hall putsches, or however you say it, putzes. I mean, Hitler's guys were armed. He called shooting a manly sport. And Stalin came to power as a result of an armed revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. In both cases, it was like, you know, the armed right wingers in society overthrowing the existing government, both Hitler and Stalin. So had there been no guns in Germany or in Russia at the time of the rise of the Third Reich or the Russian Revolution, then they wouldn't have had those violent revolutions. And Hitler and Stalin might not never have been.
Well, wouldn't that have been nice?
Yeah. Now, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here.
A couple other really fast ones. Tax filing, because the government did not pass the tax bill until January 2nd, tax forms were not printed and were not made up. And so now tax filing won't even begin till January 30th. And some things like the residential energy credits and depreciation and amortization, some of that may not be done till the end of February, early March in terms of...
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mike Papantonio on the line with us. He of Ring of Fire with the Sam Cedar and Bobby Kennedy Jr. RingofFire.com. It is RingofFire.com, right, Pap?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
But Ring of Fire Radio is how we refer to it. And there's also, in fact, you can find a link and a picture of Pap right at the top of our website. He's a friend of the show. And, Pap, two things I wanted to talk to you about. You're an attorney who deals very often with these cases of people being injured and whatnot. The first is the KBR, this defense contractor, has apparently caused some deaths of American soldiers in Iraq or had some involvement in something that led to their deaths. or their sickness, and they want we, the taxpayers, to pay the bill. And the second is that the gun industry apparently has blanket immunity. They can't be sued the way the tobacco industry could be sued. And y'all participated, I believe, in going after the tobacco companies back in the day, and which caused them to change their ways in a significant way. But we can't do the same thing with the guns. So those are my two topics. Let me just, you know, I wound you up. Let me let you go off on it.
Well, first of all, the KBR story is an interesting story because it's showing us the backstory to having private contractors come in and do what government should be doing. The idea, what happened in this case is you had $85 million that was awarded to several servicemen that are dying of cancer or dying of various diseases related to a product that KBR used on a job site. Now, it was a simple process that was taking place. They were simply trying to create a water solution, a water system there in Iraq after we invaded. But they didn't tell the people that were using the product that they were using to make the system work would kill them. Now, did they know it? Absolutely. Did they cover it up? Of course they did. It's KBR. And did they distort the truth even after it was very obvious that they had lied to these people? So right now you have servicemen dying of untreatable cancer, along with a whole host of other neurological issues that they're faced with, neurological, pulmonary issues, just a whole host of very specific kinds of illnesses related to this particular chemical. Now, here's the point. What happened was this trial has now reminded us of who KBR is. KBR, you remember, is the company that in 2002 paid out millions of dollars to the Justice Department for obscene overbilling of taxpayers in the military process in Iraq and Afghanistan. Their sister company, the subsidiary Halliburton, is the subsidiary that was caught selling pulse neutron generators that were used to detonate nuclear weapons. They took those and they sold them to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, knowing that he was going to use them in an effort to try to detonate nuclear weapons. So this is a culture of crime. Both of these companies, KBR especially, we've known about the culture of crime. But what we also learned in this case is that the Pentagon and Congress were so anxious to pay their pals back. You had the Dick Cheney group that was, you know, that's where, from Halliburton, KBR. The Dick Cheney group was awarded these huge contracts in a setting where they knew this was the contract. It was unilaterally done. Company would draw the contract up. Pentagon would say, okay, well, in the contract, they would put in there that we can kill people, we can engage in criminal conduct, we can do virtually anything that would put most people in prison, and you have to indemnify us, taxpayer, for our bad conduct. Virtually unheard of. The only time that this came into effect, you don't see this in most governmental contracts. The only time you see it is this type of governmental contracts because Richard Nixon granted this kind of broad expanse of immunity for Pentagon contracts. Hmm. The other part of it, Tom, is that the Pentagon is so brain dead that even after reviewing them, they didn't negotiate anything because they were getting calls from Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney says, these are my pals. I want this to happen. And if you follow the money on this story, it goes right up to Dick Cheney.
Well, and in fact, that was my next question was, you know, Dick Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton, and
correct.
Halliburton was nearly bankrupt,
right,
because they had acquired Dresser Industries, which has this huge asbestos liability. All of a sudden, Dick Cheney becomes vice president. All of a sudden, Halliburton's no longer teetering on the edge of bankruptcy.
Yeah, people don't know that story. People have thought that Halliburton's always this flourishing company. No, you're right. They were ready to go out of business. So listen, this is a Pentagon that allowed this to happen. They allowed their criminal friends to come in for paybacks. Now, understand, Tom, this is the same Pentagon that allowed $12 billion in cash money that was delivered on a C-130 to Iraq after we invaded. It disappeared, and the Pentagon said, golly, we don't know where it went. So there's many parts.
This was a pile of pallets of $100 bills that were shrink-wrapped in plastic that was literally large enough to be seen from outer space.
Right.
That vanished.
If you ask
I'm not making this up.
No,
I mean,
it's true.
It was several truckloads of $100 bill.
Tom, it came in on C-130s. It was so much cash money. If you ask the Pentagon today what happened to it, they don't know. This is the same Pentagon that has allowed these war profiteers, first of all, to change the way we do business and come in rather than have government and having the military handle their own water delivery problems or their own cafeteria issues or their own building issues. They brought in all these private war profiteers, and we saw this broad expanse of private contracts in war zones. And this is what the Republicans have wanted forever, because it's a great way to pay back their pals that have given them this big, huge amount of political money. It's not just a Republican story. It's a Democrat story. They have been just as awful where it comes to holding these
It's really a story of how the Supreme Court, by ruling that corporations are people and money is speech, has corrupted our small d democracy. And apropos of that corruption, how did it ever happen that you could sue the tobacco companies for selling things that kill people and get them to change their behavior? So at the very least, their product is a little less likely to kill, and it doesn't kill quite as many people. But you can't do the same thing with the gun industry.
It started in 2005 when you had George Bush deliver this wonderful thing to the gun industry. But he wasn't just delivering it to the gun industry. The NRA came in with a bill and said, we want total immunity because we're being sued. We're being sued because you have lawyers like me and my friends up in New York and California, some people that were uniting to bring cases like this, that said they want to sue us because we're building mechanisms that are cop killers. We're creating ammunition that has the ability to pierce through a SWAT armor or body armor. We're building gun mechanisms that has the ability to kill 100 people in less than 20 seconds. So what we did is you had lawyers that were bringing lawsuits and saying, listen, there has to be some responsibility because a lot of this, Tom, was taken by way of the black market. There were design defects in the guns. There was defects in the way they were marketing the guns. It was simply a criminal enterprise where we brought RICO cases against some of these companies. And all of a sudden, the NRA gets together with the Chamber of Commerce, by the way, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They get together with ALEC. They get together with all of the usual suspects, and they create legislation that gives this industry total, utter immunity. They can do whatever the hell they want. They can make something as defective as they want. They have no need to improve anything. Now, I will tell you this. Before they were given that immunity, we were already making inroads in making this industry more responsible. Wow. But after the Congress gave them immunity in 2005, it has been lawless. It has been an expanse of criminals in every kind of way, not just the criminals carrying the guns, but the criminals who are manufacturing the guns. They're doing it in places like Eastern Europe, parts of Asia, bringing it in through all types of black market avenues.
Amazing. Amazing. Mike Papantonio, ringoffire.com, Ring of Fire Radio. Pap, you always astound me. Thank you so much for the information.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking with you. 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Yeah, I used to say George W. Bush, when he invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, for the people in those countries, he opened the gates of hell. I hadn't realized in 2005 he did it for us, for the people in Newtown, Connecticut as well.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You might want to contact your members of Congress, your member of the House of Representatives, your two senators, and suggest that they look into that immunity that the gun industry has. Welcome back. Talk media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program, and Robert listening on WWRL in New York City. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
How you doing? Tom, you mentioned that George Washington read the troops against the British and against the rebels in western Pennsylvania. In the Ron Chernow biography of Alexander Hamilton, he mentions that Washington turned around, never reached the destination, and left Alexander Hamilton in charge. He had been made a general, so technically you're incorrect on that point.
Okay, well, thank you for the technical correction. When I started talking about the Whiskey Rebellion, I went to DuckDuckGo, my favorite search engine, and not a sponsor. I like the fact that they don't track all your searches the way that Google does.
Yeah, but technically it wasn't.
But let me finish my sentence here. I went to DuckDuckGo.com, and I'm reading the website of the tobacco and it's called TTB.gov, which is, hang on just a second here. which is the official website of the Tobacco and Alcohol Tax and Trade Bureau. This is a federal agency, okay? And let me just read from their site. President George Washington took notice of the resistance to the whiskey tax, and George Washington became the only sitting U.S. president to personally lead troops in the field when he led the militia on a nearly month-long march west over the Whiskey Rebellion. Now, I'm guessing that you're probably absolutely right that he didn't finally show up at the very end of it, but over and over and over again, you get even the Wikipedia, which is notoriously rewritten by right wingers, on pretty much anything that is controversial, has a photo of George Washington reviewing the militia as they were about to go out and put down the Whiskey Rebellion.
I think he went halfway with them. But another interesting point is when they made Alexander Hamilton a general, that ticked off Aaron Burr. That was one of the points of friction, that Aaron Burr, they had both been adjutants with Washington during the war, and now he was a general and the other guy wasn't. And that was one of the reasons.
You think this is what led to the duel?
But it was one of the contributing factors, I think, that now Hamilton had been elevated above Burr in the military.
Very interesting.
That was one of the points of friction.
But Robert?
The Ron Chernow biography is incredible. Anything the guy writes is incredible, and that's what he wrote in there.
I have not read the book. I'll have to check it out. Robert, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for validating my belief that I have the smartest listeners on earth of any radio show that there is. I am so pleased that you called. Thank you for sharing that with us. Will in Blakesley, Pennsylvania. Hey, Will, you wanted to correct something an earlier caller said?
How you doing? Pardon me?
You wanted to correct something an earlier caller said?
Oh, yeah, right. That caller that called in about Dianne Feinstein saying that 3 years ago she went on 60 Minutes and wanted an outright ban of guns. I decided to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little off in some of the facts. Okay. It's actually on Breitbart's site, you know. What a shock, huh?
Right.
And anyway, it's on there. First off, it was 60. It was 1995. That's the first correction. But okay. And secondly, it was after, you know, they had worked on the assault rifles ban, and they it's so obvious. Just if you look at the clip, they edit the clip so what she was talking about. She was talking about in context. She says, if it was up to me, I would ban all assault rifles in the United States, but they edited it so it sounds like she's saying all guns. It's very obvious. That's where you got that information from. You can check yourself if you want. You know?
So Breitbart is editing video to make it look like a politician is saying something they're not saying. Surprise! Surprise!
Yeah, I was shocked. I never would have thought that would have happened. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for setting the record straight. I appreciate it. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? Happy New Year.
Thank you, and the same to you, Paul.
Yeah, and got you here on 91.3 coming in, as long as I kind of hold the radio in the corner and hold my mouth right.
Okay.
I would get something pretty good.
That's great. That's great. Thank you.
Well, about the idea of this this all-out, all-against-all war sort of, I don't know, with about the guns is that there are commentators on the right, the far right, I would say, who are actually saying that that's going to happen and advocating for that.
Well, it's essentially it is arguably a cornerstone of Christian theology in John's Revelation, and it's a large cornerstone of Mormon theology. Mormons are required or encouraged to have a year's supply of food for when the end times come, when the awful times come. And, Glenn Beck is a convert to Mormonism. He's probably the most high profile, well-known person who is basically kind of pushing this line of look out
look out, here comes tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, there's a guy by the name of, he's a professor apparently. I don't know how he passed his orals, but, is by the name of Arthur Herman. You might have heard of him. He's got an article out recently, I guess this week. And saying that, this is what they're pushing to the right wing audience is that this is why you need your guns is because there's going to be some kind of some kind of street wars, and it's all over, and it's over this time, entitlements and government spending. So I did challenge
this is all code, Paul. This is code.
Huh?
This is code for white people saying to other white people, black people are going to come and get you.
Right.
And they've been saying that since the days of slavery, and it is despicable.
But
that's what it is. It's code.
I did challenge this man on another program earlier this week, and he did back off on his rhetoric, knowing that, at least to me, but that's what he's pushing.
Yeah.
And that's what they're pushing. I have a member of my family who's in that camp who thinks this way. That's what they, and calling for this going to be a civil war
right.
in this country. Now, I think I've said to you before, there's no need for war. We can split the sheets now when it comes down to some of these states. I'd say give the Confederacy back with a letter of apology, but the
problem is, I mean, even in the most red of the red states, you got 35, 40, 45% of the people voting for President Obama, voting Democratic, voting progressive. I don't think we're at the point where we can just, you know, draw a line across the country and say, that's it, you know, we're going to chop off the Confederacy. Although they sure seem to be working on it. Paul, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to 91.3 FM. KBCS in Seattle. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And check out our website, tomhartman.com. We have a newly improved app for the Apple iPhone and iPad. Bad and the very, very peritonitiously ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good. The National Cathedral. The historic church in Washington, D.C. has announced that it'll begin hosting same-sex wedding ceremonies. The announcement makes the National Cathedral one of the first Episcopal congregations in the U.S. to implement a new rite for same-gender blessings. Speaking about the decision, Cathedral Dean, the very Reverend Gary Hall, said, I read the Bible as seriously as fundamentalists do, and my reading of the Bible leads me to think, or it leads me to want to do this, because I think it's being faithful to the kind of community that Jesus would have us be. Let's hope that the reverence feeling spreads across more of America, and more Americans realize that marriage equality is a universal value. The bad. Congressman Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas. During an appearance on the Laura Ingraham radio show, the Republican congressman argued that women are physically unfit to serve in combat roles in the military. He went so far as to say that it's nature that women aren't intended to serve on the front lines. However, multiple studies have proven that notion wrong. A survey of several NATO allies that allowed women to have frontline roles in Afghanistan found that they caused no significant problem and that they were better at intelligence gathering than their male counterparts. The Department of Defense began loosening its prohibition on women serving in combat roles in early 2002. And the very, very ugly Rush Limbaugh. On yesterday's broadcast of his radio show, Limbaugh really outdid himself, going on a rant about a supposed movement that's underway to normalize pedophilia. Take a listen.
There is a movement on to normalize pedophilia, and I guarantee you your reaction to that's probably much the same as your reaction when you first heard about gay marriage. What has happened to gay marriage? It's become normal, and in fact, with certain people, in certain demographics, it's the most important issue in terms of who they vote for. So don't poo-poo. There's a movement to normalize pedophilia. Don't poo-poo it. People behind it are serious. And you know the left as well as I do. They glom onto something and they don't let go.
I think we all know what's going on here. In the world of conservative talk radio, there's only room for one crazy right-winger. And for years, it was Rush. But now, after his ridiculous gun rant blow-up Monday night with Piers Morgan, Alex Jones is threatening to dethrone Rush off the conservative talk radio mantle of craziness, so Limbaugh has to steal back the spotlight. And in trying to one-up Jones, Rush managed to compare, allowing two loving people to marry each other with the horrifying and disgusting act of abusing kids. And that is very, very ugly. Incredibly ugly. I want to get to a rant here in just a minute. But first, John in Ruidoso, New Mexico. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You're representing the militia as just National Guard. That's totally wrong.
There is also a provision for reserve militia or an organized militia.
Okay.
Now, just found out, I'm 63 years old, and I, as a former member of the armed forces, am a member of the unorganized militia. And I totally agree with Alex Jones.
That you have to be ready to shoot at representatives of your government?
That's what Alex is trying to point out. They're not my government anymore.
So the guy who lives next door to you who has a job working at the FBI fill in the blank, some federal agency, comes to show up at your house, you think it's your right, your duty to shoot him?
Depends.
Seriously.
I make my own judgment.
I'm starting to think that I understand now why Obama's only having two inaugural balls. Shane suggested that maybe, thank you, John, for the call, that maybe that there's enough people out there who think that shooting people who are affiliated with our government is some kind of a solution to some kind of a problem, that there's a security issue involved. But who knows? Sticking a whale in a fish tank, to change the subject slightly, is a bad idea. What's the old joke? It doesn't get you the fish and the whale isn't happy. No, it's a bad variation. Anyway, with all its body fat pressed up against all four glass walls, there's no room for any of the other fish, the goldfish, the zebrafish, the suckerfish, to swim around or even eat, since, of course, the whale's going to eat not only all the fish food, but likely the fish themselves. Eventually, all the other fish are going to die. Then all you're left with is a whale alone in a fish tank. And what good is that? Point is, whales don't belong in fish tanks any more than giant transnational monopolies or oligopolies belong in our economy. Nature has a way of restricting the size of animals in their ecosystems, making sure they don't get too big and cause problems for the other animals and organisms that call that same ecosystem home. Similarly, our economy must have mechanisms to restrict the size of corporations to make sure they don't become too big and cause problems for other smaller businesses trying to make a living. This was the intent of the Sherman Antitrust Act, passed in 1890 during the height of the Gilded Age, also known as the Long Depression, when there was a bunch of whales in our fish tank economy. But the last great breakup of a monopoly happened in the 1970s and 80s when Richard Nixon's Justice Department went after AT&T, which at the time was the largest corporation in the world, for violating antitrust laws. After a settlement, AT&T agreed in 1984 to break up its Bell system into seven different companies known as the Baby Bells. That left the market open for new players to jump in, offering new services and new prices. The AT&T whale had been taken out of the fish tank, and in the end, it was good to all the investors involved as well. In fact, the value of AT&T and all its former subsidiaries tripled after the breakup. Breaking up monopolies is good for the economy. Whether it's the breakup of Standard Oil and American Tobacco in the early 20th century, or more recently, the breakup of AT&T, removing the whale from the fish tank always leads to more competition in the market, which, to quote conservatives, means lower prices and better products. Unfortunately, there haven't been many success stories since the breakup of AT&T. That's because in response to AT&T breakup, Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Antitrust Act. And the monopolies and oligopolies have since returned. Even the Baby Bells began merging together, again forming bigger and bigger telecom companies. This week, Robert Reich warned that future bailouts of Wall Street are inevitable. Why? Because there's too many dang whales in the Wall Street fish tank. As Reich points out, quote, "The biggest Wall Street banks are now far bigger than they were 4 years ago when they were considered too big to fail. The five largest have almost 44% of all U.S. bank deposits. That's up from 37% in 2007, just before the crash. A decade ago, they only had 28%. That means our entire banking system relies on just a few whales that must be saved at all costs from going belly up, or else the entire system goes belly up. While banking is the most notorious example of whales in a fish tank, it's not the only example. Consider our food industry. According to Tom Philpott at Mother Jones Magazine, agriculture oligopolies exist from farm to shelf. Just four companies control 90% of the global grain trade. Just three companies control 70% of our beef industry. And just four companies control 58% of the pork and chicken industry. On the retail side, Walmart controls a quarter of the entire U.S. grocery market. And just four companies produce 75% of our breakfast cereals, 75% of our snack foods, 60% of our cookies, and half of all the ice cream sold in supermarkets across the nation. And then there's the health insurance market. Just four health insurance companies, United Health Group, WellPoint, Aetna, and Humana, control three quarters of the entire health insurance market. And as a 2007 study by the group Healthcare for America now uncovered, in 38 states, just two insurers control 57% of the market. In 15 states, one insurance company controls 60% of the market. Since there's no competition in that marketplace, prices continue to get higher and higher, while the profits for these whales skyrocket and the services that they're offering start to stink. In the cellular phone market, just four companies, AT&T Mobile, Verizon Wireless, T-Mobile, and Sprint Nextel, four companies control 89% of the market. And in the internet market, just a handful of corporations, AT&T, Comcast, Time Warner, and Verizon, control more than half of the market. Also, from newspapers to television, radio to movies, oligopolies, or whales, dominate the markets. If we were to give the internet monopolies the same treatment Richard Nixon gave AT&T in the 1970s, then maybe we Americans could enjoy the same super fast internet speeds and super cheap rates that most of the developed world has, because they keep the whales out of their fish tanks. For example, South Korea gets internet speeds 200 times faster than what most Americans get, yet they pay $27 a month for that. Similar success stories can be found all across Europe. Rising health care, food, and energy costs can all be tracked back to the whales and the fish tank problem in the monopolies in America. Recently, we unveiled our hashtag No Billionaires campaign. The hashtag No Billionaires, we've got the Twitter at No Billionaires, NoBillionaires.com, to draw attention to the parasitic effect billionaires have on our economy. You can check that website out at NoBillionaires.com. But trillionaire transnational corporations are just as harmful to our economy. And we need lawmakers willing to stand up to these corporate whales and get back to enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act once again. Let the fish swim freely. 45 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it would be interesting to do an analysis of how many companies control the gun market in the United States. I know Walmart's the biggest gun retailer. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Well, not entirely all conservative. I guess some of them are just bizarre. Welcome back. Bill, in Fairbury, Illinois, you had a question about socialism?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a strange one. I actually heard you talk about monopolies in just a minute ago and everything like that, and it was rather interesting how they've actually taken over our country. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to talk to someone at a broker yesterday, and we got in the debate about capitalism and socialism, and he actually came up to me and was telling me how socialism in Europe is actually collapsing these days because his opinion was we have not enough producers and too many people, I guess, are taking off the entitlement system. Now, I spent 3 years over in Germany, and I know you were over there, too, and I thought it worked quite well, and I thought the system was, quite alive and well right now. So
it is.
What is this talk right now about the right? Is it something the right wing's putting out there? Are they having some economic problems? I just want some perspective on this so I can more effectively debate this, I guess.
Sure. First of all, the economies of the various countries in Europe got knitted together with the European Union in ways that they all thought was going to benefit them tremendously. The EU was put together during a boom time, basically. And I don't think that they anticipated what would happen during a bust when they had given up control of their own currency. The Greeks, for example, could have very easily resolved their debt problem by simply, if they still were on the drachma, by simply reducing the value of the drachma through inflation. And this is traditionally how governments do this. You know, they say, okay, our currency is worth 10% less than it was. What that does is it makes your exports less expensive. It makes imports more expensive. That encourages domestic manufacturing. It encourages export, puts people back to work. You know, over time, the value of the currency is reduced, which is arguably not a good thing, but over the short term, it solves the problem. And so, you know, I would say that the biggest problem that the countries like Greece and Spain and Italy are facing right now and Ireland is that they lost their own currencies. They no longer have the Irish lira. They no longer have the Italian whatever it was and the Greek drachma and the Spanish peso, I think it was. But so that's part of it. The other part of it is that it isn't so much. First of all, you've got to define socialism. There's the old Soviet style socialism, which was really communism, which didn't work out so well. And then there's democratic socialism, and which is where the people say, okay, here's the social safety net through which we will not allow people to fall. And we're not going to have state ownership of enterprises unless they're enterprises that are logical, natural monopolies, like the waterworks, the power company, those, you know, where you can only bring one vendor into your house. You can only bring one water line into your house, one sewer line into your house, one power line into your house, and therefore it should be owned by we the people. And the countries that are doing that, like Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, France, Germany, they're doing fine. And they all call themselves social democratic countries, social democracies, or socialist democracies, democratic socialism. The problem is that when the banksters crashed the world economy, the countries that did not have their own currencies, and all these Scandinavian countries I just named all still have their own currencies. Germany doesn't, but Germany basically dominates the euro. They control the euro. So they functionally have their own currency. And the French have a lot of say in it. But the Greeks don't. They got the short end of that stick. So, you know, by controlling their own currencies and by having social democracies, they're doing great, you know, in Sweden and in Denmark and in Norway and Finland and like that. So when the economy crashed, the countries that were not as strong and didn't control their own economies were basically at the mercy of the banksters, and the banksters are just stripping them. They're pillaging them. And the people are starting to revolt. The people are starting to say no. And it's called austerity, that pillaging. It's Naomi Klein refers to it as as disaster capitalism or the shock doctrine. And that's what Republicans want to do to the United States. And, you know, we do control our own currency, but there are obviously some limits on that, as we're seeing in this debt ceiling debate. You know, Congress can still hold hostage. So, I'm sorry to get so wonky, but there are kind of layers within layers here. If you try to say that the problem in Europe is socialism, no, it has very little to do with that, to nothing to do with that. In fact, you could argue that the problem in Europe was deregulation of banking in the 1990s and the early 2000s that led to European banks crashing at the same time American banks crashed.
Yeah, I figure there was a conjunction there that had something to do with our crisis that somehow bled over into theirs. This guy was pretty adamant by saying that it was a problem. They didn't have enough producers, and you know, you've heard the old saying, well, the problem with socialism is we just don't have enough of somebody else's money to go around, which I don't believe. I was there 3 years. I liked their system. We need to adopt more of it here. I just don't know why.
Yeah, it's a nice bumper sticker, but it
doesn't work.
Yeah, it's a nice bumper sticker, but it doesn't actually play out. And in fact, those countries that are the most laissez-faire, that are the least socialistic, countries like Somalia, for example, doesn't work out so well. And the same thing in the United States. If you look at the states that have the most generous welfare systems, they tend to be the states with the highest standard of living, New York, California. Now, you look at the states that have the least generous social welfare systems, they tend to be the states that have the lowest standard of living, in Mississippi, for example. And it's because it's a generative problem. If people don't have enough money in their pocket to buy things, then you don't have demand in the economy, and the economy slowly spins downward. Whereas when people have at least basics covered, they got money in their pocket to buy things, that creates demand, and the economy slowly spirals up. And that's the split that we're seeing in the United States. And it's frankly the split that we're seeing in Europe, again, because those countries that could have solved the problem before by simply inflating their currency, devaluing their currency, no longer have the power to do that. It's why I think that the Greeks 2 years ago should have said, that's it, we're not on the euro anymore, we're going to go back to the drachma. And instead, they're, you know, they've got these banksters saying, no, no, you've got to take, you know, literally islands that are public property and sell them to billionaires. And you know, giant public arenas and public utilities, and privatize all this stuff at fire sale prices. And then we'll free you from your, you know, chains of debt bondage, which is just a tragedy. Bill, thank you for the call. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest on the Republican posturing over the coming debt ceiling battle and how the congressional plan became one hostage crisis after another. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science Rocks, and the best of the rest of the news along with your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag your end. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.